Hey there, sports history fan. Arnie Chapman here from the Sports History Network. Now, before you jump into this episode, I wanted to share with you an exciting giveaway we have going on with Home Field Apparel. We have a digital $50 gift card to homefieldapparel.com for one lucky fan of the Sports History Network. All you got to do is head over to sportshistorynetwork.com/giveaways to sign up. Again, that's sportshistorynetwork.com/giveaways.
You know, it's always refreshing when you meet somebody that's an inspiration to mankind and their kindness and generosity and their empathy for other humans is on par with those of some of the greatest. When that person once was on the offensive line and you saw them tangle with some of the biggest guys in the world, you know that this is a special human. Steve Wright, our guest today, brings us his book and his meaning for life and his story of Aggressively Human. Steve's coming up in just a moment to tell us all about it.
This is the Pigskin Daily History Dispatch, a podcast that covers the anniversaries of American football events throughout history on a day-to-day basis. Your host, Darren Hayes, is podcasting from America's North Shore to bring you the memories of the gridiron one day at a time. So as we come out of the tunnel of the Sports History Network, let's take the field and go no huddle through the portal of positive gridiron history with PigskinDispatch.com.
This podcast is part of the Sports History Network, your headquarters for the yesteryear of your favorite sport. You can learn more at sportshistorynetwork.com.
Hello, my football friends. This is Darren Hayes of PigskinDispatch.com. Welcome once again to the Pigpen, your portal to positive football history, and welcome to a special edition where we get to talk to a former NFL player that played on multiple teams and had some really big games and big moments, and he has a book out that we're going to talk about. His name is Steve Wright. Steve Wright, welcome to the Pigpen.
Darren, thank you for having me on Pigskin Dispatch. Look forward to chatting.
That is hard to get out. I know I have trouble getting it out myself sometimes. I had a poor choice of putting words together, I think, when I named it, but it's all good.
We have fun. For you. It's all right. It's good.
Yeah, I guess, Steve, we're going to give you a couple opportunities to do this, but you have a book that's out recently that is going to be the main focal point of our discussion here. Why don't you give us the name of the book, the full name, and where folks can get a copy of it at?
Sure. Thank you. Aggressively Human is the name of the book. It's my memoir. You can get it at Amazon, obviously. Another great spot, if you want a pretty healthy discount, I'm going to give anybody that DMs me, and you can find my Facebook and Instagram sites on writeauthor.com. I've got a lot of photos in there, probably 30, 40 photos rotating through there, Bo Jackson and games and all my blogs that I did leading up to the release of the book. But you can get it at Amazon, or I'd advise coming just to simply writeauthor.com. And if you DM me, I will give you a healthy discount for my book. I'll personalize it to you and mail it out to you.
Well, that is an incredible offer. So, folks, if you're driving and don't have a pen or pencil, don't worry. I'm going to put it in the show notes so you can get right into Steve's site and give him that DM and take advantage of that. That's a great offer. So thank you for that. So, Steve, you know, you have, you know, a really long, lengthy career here in the NFL. You were an offensive lineman and played multiple positions on the offensive line. And we'll get into that in a second. What was your inspiration and your attraction to football?
I started playing in fourth grade with all my buddies, and we had full equipment, helmets, everything, and banging away the Wildcats up in Minneapolis. And then just staying, which I really express a lot in my book, of staying present. I mean, we were just having fun. The neighborhood guys all playing on the neighborhood Wildcats. And then it went into junior high and high school. Then I started getting offers, and I thought, man, that's going to be my way. Because I was playing hockey in high school, played basketball, track. I was an All-American in shot put and discus in high school. But the real calling really became football. I was playing tight end, which I just loved. Played tight end in college my freshman and senior year. Just kind of one thing led to another. I never had any dreams or hopes of going to the NFL. I was just having fun in my freshman year, my sophomore year, junior year. My junior year, I started getting some notes, some letters and packages from NFL teams. And I thought, wow, is this a possibility? And then my senior year, it really started pouring in. And the draft came and went, and I had an opportunity to sign with the Dallas Cowboys. Signed for peanuts, but it was a, I was a, I got a free agent contract. I negotiated my own signing bonus as my own agent. I signed for $1,500. It was my signing bonus. Times have changed.
Yeah, they certainly have. And I'm sure you probably had the tough negotiator of Gil Brandt that you were dealing with at that time with the Cowboys.
I had Gil Brandt, but I had one of the scouts out signing me, and then Gil Brandt was the one that finally gave me the call after it was we they whittled away 120 free agents and got down to about five of us, and I was waiting in the hotel room. We had broken camp in Thousand Oaks, and I'm sitting in my hotel room, and he called and tried to put on this act like, Steve, hey, I really want to thank you. The Cowboys want to thank you. You worked your tail off and we really appreciate it. And my heart is just sunk. I'm just like crushed. I'm just waiting for him to say that. And he goes, but on a lighter note, congratulations. You are now on the 1981 Dallas Cowboys. Get your playbook and get over here to practice. And I was like, wow.
Wow,
And I go deep into that story. I jumped up and jumped across the two beds in the room and broke one of the beds. And I landed on the floor and he asked me if I was okay. And what was that? And never mind, everything's good. I'll be over.
you played, tight end, you said your senior year in college at Northern Iowa. Is that where you played?
Northern Iowa.
Northern Iowa. Now, how did you go from being a tight end in college to being a tackle in the NFL? That's got to be quite a transformation to your
That's
body and your mind,
a great question that always bugged me. It's I got down to the team meeting, and there must have been 140 guys in with Tom Landry, and he's talking to us, welcoming us all to training camp 1981. And then when everything, I didn't know anybody. I had met all the different coaches, and so when things broke up, I just assumed I was a tight end. So. And I was just enamored with Mike Ditka, who was the tight end coach and also my special teams coach. And so when he left, I knew I was going to be with him quite a bit with just special teams. But so he took off and went over to his room with Billy Joe Dupree, Jay Saldy, Doug Cosby, some other great players. I just followed along. And I'm sitting in there at the start of the meeting, and Jim Myers, the offensive line coach, he yanks the door open and goes, right. The hell are you doing in here? You're not a tight end. You're an offensive lineman. Get your ass over here. So I was like, okay, I'll play anywhere. I could have been a kicker. I was so happy just to be there. And so from then on, I was an offensive lineman. But they did use me. All the teams used me as a tight end on short yardage and goal line. I caught a couple passes in Philadelphia with the Raiders. Caught one touchdown in the USFL and really wish the Raiders would have used me more. So, I was 6'6 and 285, 290, and I got monster hands, and I could just, but I'm happy with how everything turned out.
Yeah, and just looking at some of the images, from back in the day, you were extremely athletically built too for an offensive lineman. You see you next to some of the other folks that you played alongside with and across the line from, and they were more typical what you think of, those offensive linemen are just bulky, the low center of gravity. And you were a big dude that was athletically built, so
Right.
I'm
And here's a interesting one. When I got to the Cowboys, they fined you if you were over 280. The game was different before 1983 when the Washington Redskins came out with the hogs, the first 300 pounders. And so once they started showing all that success, they beat us in the championship game and won the Super Bowl, and they had 300-pound line, at least a couple of guys, but they were heading that way. So everything changed from then on. Now it's time to start bulking up. But Yeah, I'm a workout fanatic. I just was with four or five of my buddies. Came home to chat with you, but stay really active. Really watch what's going in my pie hole, making sure that if anything's going in there, it's full of nutrition. I don't eat junk, don't eat sugar, and pretty I'm in pretty great shape to this day. I'm weighing about 235.
Oh,
Like I
amazing.
said, my wife's on the same program. I stop eating about 2, 3 o'clock in the afternoon. It's just a habits that started in high school and carried into the pros. And
Well,
yeah,
you're looking great still to this day. So I didn't mean
thank you.
to.
I'm feeling good. Feeling
Yeah,
good. So
that's good.
thank
That's
you.
awesome. So okay, so you played with Dallas for a couple years, and Tom Landry, and who Danny White was the quarterback then, right? Is
Danny
that
White, Tony Dorsett. Yeah.
I say this with a little bit of angst because I'm from Northwestern Pennsylvania, so I'm of course a Steelers fan growing up as a kid in the
Sure.
70s. So, those battles that they had with the Cowboys, I was, for being in the different conferences, they were pretty much rivals.
Yeah.
And of course, rivals with your team that you would join later, the Raiders too. I can remember some great
Yeah.
games with those guys
Everybody
too.
wanted to beat up the Raiders and everybody wanted to beat up the Steelers, the two dominant teams. I loved watching the Steelers. I was just, I'd do anything to watch Jack Lambert and Mean Joe Green. And yeah, those guys really helped light the fire under me, along with a lot of many of the Raiders. But yeah, great team.
Well, I've got a special day. I mean, just for the audience, now we are filming or airing this and filming this on the 29th of March. And this is a special anniversary of something that you lived through. On March 29th, 1984, the team you were playing for at the time, the Baltimore Colts, left in the middle of the night and moved to Indianapolis. This is the 40th anniversary that you and I are speaking on, so I feel quite honored that we're talking on this
How
day.
about that? Wow, that's an interesting fun fact that rocked my world for the better. For the better. I was traded from America's team to Frank Cush and the Baltimore Colts, and you couldn't have hit more rock bottom. I was crushed. I had just closed on a house. My girlfriend and I were living in there. I'd only been there for about a month. And got through with the last preseason game meal. And Tom Landry leaned over and says, "Steve, take a walk with me. And where you're leaving today at 1 o'clock." And it was like 8 o'clock in the morning. I was on a plane at 1 o'clock, and I go into a funny long story with this. And I just packed up what I could, said goodbye to my buddies, and off to Baltimore. And the Baltimore City just really didn't like the Colts. I think, roughly 65,000 seat stadium. And it was 20, maybe 30% to capacity. It was just, there was nobody in the seats. And they hated us around town. They didn't like the Ursays. They didn't like the players. We sucked. I think it is one of the most brilliant moves for Robert Ursay to just sneak out in the middle of the night, because he was going to get a hard time either way. Just get out of town. So he goes over to Indianapolis and he pays a $1 rent for a packed stadium at the new, whatever it was, the Hoosier Dome or something at the time. So it was just a great move. The first time that the Colts have brought me back, the Cowboys have never brought me back for a thing, but the Colts brought us all back for the 40th reunion just about probably 2 months ago. And it was so great seeing all these old buddies and teammates and everything else. But today's the actual date, huh?
Yeah, today's the actual date, where the semi trucks were on ESPN in the dark and,
It
loaded
was
up and
a shock to all of us. I was at my house in Dallas and I'm watching, I don't know if it was ESPN or something. I was like, "What?" So I had to fly back to my apartment, rent a car, get a U-Haul truck, and haul all my stuff over to Indianapolis. And I was so excited to do it.
Now, was that sort of the mindset of the whole team? But was everybody sort of excited for this new endeavor in
Yeah,
Indy?
it was a tired old facility. The town just didn't like us at all. And then to get over, and we still sucked, but and we couldn't do anything wrong. The mayor was just doing so many things for the individual players, the team. Doors were open everywhere to anything we wanted to do. It was beautiful.
Wow, that's awesome. And I'm
Yeah.
glad I got to talk to you on this day too. I didn't realize it when we
Yeah,
scheduled
of
it
course.
till a couple
That's
of days ago,
exciting.
but I wanted to surprise you with that a little bit. I thought maybe
That's
that would
nice.
stir a memory, and it seems like it did. So now you had two different numbers during your playing days. You were number 73 in Dallas. You were number 66 later on with the Raiders, and I think 73 with the Colts too, if I'm not mistaken. Now,
Correct.
was there any significance to the numbers that you chose, or?
No, I liked 66. I was given 73, and I didn't even think of asking for 66.
Yeah, you thought
66.
you were a tight end, right? When they gave you 73.
Yeah, I was just happy to be there, trying to fight for my life, and that's all I cared about. I didn't care what number I had or anything else. Just, get me on the field and work my tail off. It was, I just been invited back to my university for homecoming in Cedar Falls, Iowa. So I'm going back there for the homecoming October 26th. The head coach, who I've never met before, has invited me back to speak to the team after the Friday walkthrough before
Awesome.
the game on Saturday. Yeah. And my whole thing is just staying present. And so I'm going to talk to these guys about just staying present in the game. Don't think about the homecoming parties and everything else, but that's how I survived, I believe, the 120 other free agents. I had five other roommates as a free agent rookie, and so six of us are sitting around in a room, and these guys were all talking about the scrimmage game or the first preseason game against the 49ers or against the Rams or something. And all I could think of, and I didn't really realize this until I really started writing the book, that I couldn't think of anything besides tomorrow morning's practice, because the 120 guys would weigh in every day, and next to the scale was a list of all the players that were on the field. And every day there was just black marks. It just redacted, like, these guys are gone. And one of them was one of my teammates, an All-American from University of Northern Iowa, a guy named Owen Doctor, who I knew was going to make the team over me. I got up on the scale one day looking at his name, and his name was crossed out. So I had to just focus on, okay, morning is run blocking, and afternoon practice is pass protection and all that, the passing game. So I couldn't think about that. I had to just focus, because I might not make it to lunch. I might have a crummy morning practice, and they were pulling guys out at lunchtime, and they'd disappear. They would be there for the afternoon practice. And so it was, I just stayed focused on what I had to do the next practice and during that practice and during that drill, just down to minutiae, just down to the finest point. And it worked for me. So that's my message to the players when I get up to Cedar Falls, and to everybody. It's just, you hear it a lot, it's cliche, but stay present. Stay present in whatever it is, this conversation here, not be thinking about doing something else. And it's just, you're so much more successful.
Great advice. Now, that's a great segue into a part of the book that you talk about. You mentioned a few times that you had somebody you just mentioned earlier. Coach Mike Ditka had some great inspiration, a couple different things he said to you that really inspired you and you carried on with you throughout your career and through life. Maybe you could share some of that experience with us.
A couple different times, he had seen me as a rookie, just frustrated in practice. Maybe I got beat or something. He'd come up I call them the wisdom walks, and he'd come up and throw his big arm around my neck and just drag me away. And for some reason, he liked me. I think he liked the fight I had in me, because I was getting into fights quite a bit. Just a lot of that's just out of frustration. And he'd take me for a little wisdom walk, and he'd say, "Steve, everybody here has got the physical tools. This is what's going to separate you from here up. You're going to get your ass kicked. Figure it out. Don't deal with it. Figure it out and correct it. And if you don't, you're gone. Your time here could be very short. So if you don't get it figured out, don't make excuses. Don't point fingers. Just get up and kick somebody's ass the next play. But you're all going to get your ass kicked here today. So accept it, deal with it, learn how to, counter it, and hold your own." And then another one that was really cool that I talk about in the book is when my offensive line coach was always yelling at me. And he took me aside and he said, "Man, Jim Myers, my line coach, he's just driving you crazy. And he's always yelling at you. I see it too. And that's got to be driving you." Yeah. And I was actually had tears in my eyes. I was just so frustrated because I'm trying as hard as I can. He'd say, "Steve, you start to worry if he stops yelling at you." And I just went, "Whoa." I just remember just my head spinning. It was like, wow, he cares. He cares and he knows that he can squeeze a little bit more out of me, and he's going to see if he can squeeze that out of me. And he called it later. He called putting a whip to a racehorse or a donkey. The racehorse is going to go, and he wanted to see if I was a goat or a donkey or a racehorse. And so, just a couple of those things just really hit me like a ton of bricks in such a good way. So I've really tried to share that with younger football players and just other people in life. It's they're good lessons that this is going to separate you. And then in my other parts of my book here, my entrepreneurial and getting on Survivor and everything else, it was the complete opposite. It was keep this out of it and go with your gut. I always think that our gut's been developed over a million years of evolution, and it knows how the parasympathetic or the sympathetic, run or fight or flight. So I've really moved it from up here to my gut with everything else that I do. If it feels right in my gut, don't try to overthink it. It might be a date. It might be, going out with a girl and, oh, what is she all about? Does it feel right? Try it and just check it out. Or the doors opened up for Survivor. And I could have said, "Well, let me call you tomorrow." I don't know. But my gut just sounded like this might be interesting. I might not make it on the show. But when I got asked, I just said yes. When I got asked to cool the Olympics, I said yes and then figure it out. But when the door opens, charge through it. And that's another thing I really try to express to everybody. As you're here for such a short time, and your world can turn upside down or end quickly. If there's a cool opportunity that you think sounds interesting, if it might be a date or whatever it is, go do it. Business opportunity, anything, and figure it out along the way. It's like they say, what do they build a plane as you're dropping? Just go ahead, life, go for it. You're responsible for yourself, is in my book.
Yeah, you definitely portray that a lot in the book, those messages. I mean, it's great for the youngsters, but it's, older folks like myself that are reading the book. It was quite inspirational to myself too, and some of your life lessons shared are very inspirational. So
Thank
message
you.
very
Yeah, it's
well portrayed and
I
conveyed.
didn't want to be a you should, because I don't want to tell anybody. As soon as somebody tells you you should do this, it's like, ew. It's just I put the brakes on. But if I'm just trying to share what worked for me and some possibilities that might be interesting to check out, a different way to do life.
Yeah, most definitely. Now, I guess get the third phase of your pro career before we get into some of your stuff you had afterwards. How did you end up being on the Raiders team? And you were played predominantly in LA, right? You weren't in Oakland.
Always in Los Angeles.
Okay.
So I tried to renegotiate with the Indianapolis Colts. I didn't get where I thought I deserved. There was a lot of money flying around, and it wasn't going out to the Colts players. And then the USFL stepped in, and they had wheelbarrow fulls of money. And so, in a heartbeat, I just signed with the Oakland Invaders and ended up in Oakland playing with under a head coach, Charlie Sumner, who had been the defensive coordinator for the Los Angeles Raiders for the previous 10 years. Great guy, players coach. We'd go out and have a couple of martinis or something. I think I write a funny story about that as well. Before a game, he wanted myself and another buddy to go have some martinis with him before we jumped on the game, the team playing. But so then we played the 84, 85 season, and the league folded. We were in a championship game, which was awesome. And then the league folded, and he went back down to Los Angeles. Once a Raider, always a Raider, even for the coaches. So they took Charlie back, and Charlie brought myself and Anthony Carter back to the Raiders. And I spent the next 7 years there until I retired in 94.
And you played with some incredible players in your time with the Raiders too. If you could maybe tell us a little bit about who you played with.
Sure. Well, my practice partner for the 7 years was Howie Long, Howie and Greg Townsend. And they just kept me on my toes. I really had to up my game just in practice. And I've always said, I'd rather get my ass kicked in practice, which Howie, took me, schooled me quite a bit, but it's
Iron sharpens iron.
And I gave it back to him, and we worked hard and made each other better. And then blocking for having Marcus Allen in the backfield, Roger Craig, Bo Jackson, blocking for all of Bo's runs. It was a phenomenal team with just amazing talent and guys that had been around the league that you had heard of. So it's a really a veteran group of guys that knew how to play, how to fight, sticking up for each other. It was just a real team, more so than the Cowboys, the Colts, or the Invaders. We were a solid group of guys. And what's really cool, I think I mentioned it earlier, but the Colts, that was the first time they'd ever brought me back. The Cowboys in I was there at 81, 82. I played 2 seasons. They never invited me back for anything. No grudge at all. I'm fine with that. I don't really care. It's just pointing out that the Los Angeles Raiders, Oakland Raiders, every single year they invite every player back that had ever played for them. And they pay for the flights. We're going back. We'll be going back again this year. But also, too, they just threw out to us, if anybody want to take advantage of it, they're having their first wellness weekend. And so June, I don't know, middle of June for 3 days, we're going back to Oakland, and they're having all kinds of doctors there. And this is all on their dollar. They're putting us up at the hotel.
And they're doing it in Oakland rather than Vegas, huh?
All the food, drinks, everything. And then all the doctors and so my wife and I are going back for that. It's just
Incredible.
but they don't miss a thing, and they care so much. And that started with Al, and Mark is taking the baton and just looks out for the players. You bled for them, and I gave plenty of cartilage and bones and blood and everything else. And they appreciate that, and they're always paying us back with just generosity of setting us up for autograph sessions or
That's awesome.
anywhere. It's just couldn't say enough great things about the Los Angeles, the Raiders.
Yeah, now you have really an incredible story. Now, this isn't you don't hear this often. You'll usually only hear the bad when players are getting ready to leave the NFL and for life after the NFL. You made some great business decisions, great financial decisions. And why don't you tell us a little bit about some of the business things you got into as you were
Yeah,
exiting the NFL?
thank you. It's one of my more prideful times, even almost over the top of making the NFL and playing as long as I did. So I did this really on my own as well. But about 2 or 3 years before I retired, I brought the misting, the mist cooling system, fans, and all that to the NFL sidelines. I was in Palm Springs. I was having a couple of margaritas with a few friends, and we were going to start training camp in about a month or something. And I talked to the manager how to do this. He showed me how to get the pumps and the motors and the misting and the fans and everything. And I just took that idea and gave it a new application. I put it on the sidelines, and it was a huge hit. And then at the end of the game, one of the ball boys came over and said, "Hey, there's a couple guys in the stands that want to talk to you. Have you got a second?" And so, with my equipment on, I ran over and talked to these two gentlemen that had a lot of horses at Hollywood Racetrack, which the SoFi Stadium is built on top of now. They gutted this old horse track that I used to go over to quite a bit. But they want to talk to me about putting this misting system in the barns. And so I
Really?
had my first meeting in my equipment, and went over there, I don't know, it was 6 months later or something like that. And we started installing, and then that word got around, and I really didn't do much marketing. I picked up a buddy of mine who had a double finance major at USC, He and I became partners. I gave him 50% of the business because I couldn't survive without him. And I'm a team guy, and I do sales and marketing. And so between the two of us, we just started knocking it out. We were in plastic extruder plants, cooling off the molds so that the kayak could drop out of there faster and they could fill it and up production.
So the application of the product just kept going in different
Just all
areas.
over. Yeah, we were in NASA, we were in aircraft carriers, and then in 96, landed the 96 Summer Olympics. Cool it got the contract to cool that off. And that's a whole cool story that I could give you a condensed version if you want to hear it.
Yeah, please.
And a lot of my book is treating everybody alike and being kind, not trying to get anything out of it. Just be cool, just be a good person. You can either be a good person or a jerk. And so this new shoe salesman was in the locker room a few days before a game trying to sell this new shoe. And I had a Converse contract, and there was Adidas and Puma and everything else. And this guy's trying to schlep this new shoe, and he wasn't getting the time of day from anybody. And so I said, "Come here, what do you got there?" And looked at his shoe, and it's the same as a Converse. It was nice rubber cleat, it was nice, heavy duty. High top. And so he got me a pair of 16s. I wore them in the game. He was a hero in his brand new startup company, shoe company, that he got his football shoe in on a Raider in an NFL game. And that was it. And just didn't ever talk about it again. I never saw the guy again. 3 more years, I retire, got this misting company going. My partner and I fly to Atlanta to do a little sales pitch. We're up against Raytheon, GE, and other big air conditioning companies, and we kind of just laughed. And but we were proud that we at least, gave it a shot. Came home 2 weeks later, I get a call from the head guy of all of field action for the Olympics, a guy named Mike Ariano, and he said, "Hey, you've got the contract to cool this Olympics." "No way! What are you talking?" He goes, "You don't remember me, do you?" And I was like, "No, I saw you at at the sales pitch." And he goes, "I used to be a shoe salesman, and I was in your locker room, and everybody treated me like dirt. No one, and people were pushing me out of the way. You were the only one that was cool to me. And so now it's payback time. I believe in you. You believe in me, and you've
Wow.
got the Olympics, and I want you to I believe in you. So kick butt, And it was just like, wow." So it's
That is an
sort of
awesome karma story there.
yeah, exactly. So much there, and it's yeah, it gives me goosebumps just telling that story, how cool it was. Yeah, it is karma. It's putting the good out there without expecting anything. I didn't try to, I didn't expect anything for it, and all of a sudden I land the launch to my business. It was incredible.
You have some other ventures going on. One that's really interesting and it just shows your kind spirit is the program you have for youngsters around the world that may be a little bit less fortunate than we are that want to be in sports. Maybe you could tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, it's called Global Giving. And the ball is BALL, like ball, global instead of global, global giving. And it's a little play on words because we collect used sports equipment. Every home has got a bat or a pair of shoes or old deflated basketball or something else sitting around. Jerseys, high schools have the stuff that they want to get rid of, and they're bringing in a whole new set of equipment, baseball hats. Anything to do with sports, I collected, I don't know, a couple dozen surfboards and got those over to the Philippines to kids at a surf camp, and we've serviced, I think we figured out like 1 million kids we've helped, which
Wow.
is just awesome. And I think we're in roughly almost 30 countries. It was started up in Milwaukee by a good friend of ours, Mark Rollison, but globalgiving.org. If you've got sports equipment and you want to give it away, have them do something really substantial with it, or of a high school or another group that's got uniforms and shoes and anything else, please reach out to Mark at globalgiving.org.
All right. Well, yeah, definitely, folks. That's a great thing to do with the equipment that maybe you're not using anymore, your team's not using anymore. Let somebody else enjoy the sports that you enjoyed. So great stuff. Now, I guess before we let you go, you've alluded to it. You've wet our whistle a little bit. You were in reality TV and you had the opportunity, and you said you were invited to be honest. Why don't you tell us a little bit about that experience, what you can.
Sure. Yeah, it was a rush. I go down maybe once a year to see my old teammate Howie Long at the Fox studio set. Jimmy Johnson, one of the other guys on the set, had been on Survivor, and so as one of his guests, he had the lead casting director sitting in the green room, who I met, and we spent on and off 3 hours chit-chatting. And they said, "Why don't you try giving Survivor a try?" Well, I've never seen the show before. So just go for it and see if you can, see if you, does it sound interesting? I said, sure. And I said, yes, again, charged to the door, not knowing what to expect or not, haven't been watching the show. Next thing I know, I land in Nicaragua for 31 rough, miserable days of not eating. It was that show, I can't tell you how real it is. It's, you starve. There is some food contests, but those are like every third day. It's rough. I lost 33 pounds in 31 days,
Wow.
just caving in. I got home, and I was gonna go see my parents over in Arizona, and my front tooth was sore. So I went and saw my dentist. He took an X-ray, and he came back just in shock at how much bacteria was up in my tooth. And he goes, "We got to pull it in right now. This kills people in third world countries." So I got my front tooth pulled out, thanks to Survivor. She goes, this is your toothbrush. You don't have anything." And that's why I say how real it is. It's, I didn't have shoes for a month, and you're sleeping outside, and it's just, in the torrential rain. And it was an awesome experience. I'm so glad I went. They called me few years later and asked if I wanted to come back, and I said, "Hell no, one and done there." It was great. I've got some friendships from there that, you're 24/7, you're just sitting around keeping the fire going and up all night because it's pouring rain. And it was a great experience, though.
I'm sure the mental,
What's that?
I'm sure the mental fortitude is just as much as the physical stress that you put on your body, because that's
It
got
was
to play with your games, your head.
right. You're not eating, and so you're depleted, and your mind is going crazy, and you're not sleeping. And but I'm so proud that I endured it and made it through. I was the last one of my tribe voted off. It was season 22, Redemption Island, and
Okay.
I write a little bit out in the book too, but
All
I'm
right.
under contract not being able to talk too much about it, the
I
inside thing.
understand. I just thought it's kind of ironic that you described that you were introduced to this CBS network television show in a Fox studio. That's kind of
Good call.
Yeah, so very interesting. Well, Steve, we really appreciate you coming on here. Why don't you tell us once again the title of your book and where folks can get it at?
It's Aggressively Human. Voila. Is that it? Aggressively Human. You can get it at Amazon. If you'll go to writeauthor.com, there's a link there to Amazon, but also too, it's got my email. It's got my email address, my Facebook, Instagram. If you'll DM me, I will personalize a book to you at a really nice discount and mail it out to you. So hope to hear from you buying them that way. I've got a stack of books, hard and soft cover here. The website, writeauthor.com.
Incredible, incredible story, and you're an incredible human being. And we appreciate you taking the time to share your football experience and your life experience and your wisdom with us, and making us a lot better. And catch a lot more in his book. And folks, I highly recommend it. I got a copy of it, and it's a great read. And you'll find it very interesting for football and the rest of life too. So, Steve, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you. Thank you, Darren. Appreciate it. I really enjoyed being on the Pigskin. Thank you, bro.
That's all the football history we have today, folks. Join us back tomorrow for more of your football history. We invite you to check out our website, pigskindispatch.com, not only to see the daily football history, but to experience positive football with our many articles on the good people of the game, as well as our own football comic strip, Cleat Marks Comics. Pigskindispatch.com is also on social media outlets, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and don't forget the Pigskin Dispatch YouTube channel to get all of your positive football news and history. Special thanks to the talents of Mike and Gene Monroe, as well as Jason Neff, for letting us use their music during our podcast.
This podcast is part of the Sports History Network, your headquarters for the yesteryear of your favorite sport. You can learn more at sportshistorynetwork.com. Hey there, Sports History fan. This is Arnie Chapman, a.k.a. the Football History Dude, and I wanted to thank you for stopping by to listen to another episode here on the Sports History Network. Our podcasters are passionate about uncovering and sharing sports stories from yesteryear. And if you didn't know it already, we have over 30 shows across the network covering all sorts of sports history topics. In fact, here's a glimpse into one of our awesome podcasts here on the network.
Do you wish you knew more about the 100 seasons of the NFL? You're in luck because you found the Football History Dude podcast, where each episode is a journey back in time to learn about the rich history of the NFL. From the founding of the league in an auto showroom, all the way to what it is today, America's favorite sport and a behemoth of an industry. My name is Ernie Chapman. Football is my passion, and I want you to come along with me each week to explore the yesteryear of the gridiron. So hop on board my DeLorean, and let's get this baby up to 88 miles per hour.
How about that? I bet you're super hyped to go listen to that new podcast, right? Well, to learn about this show and all the other podcasts on the network, head over to sportshistorynetwork.com/podcasts. Again, that's sportshistorynetwork.com/podcasts. Head over there today to find your next favorite sports history podcast.